Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Bridget Bergen from the WNYC and Gothamist Newsroom and host of WNYC's Sunday politics show, The People's Guide to Power. I'm filling in for Brian, who's off today. The abortion debate is a major component of the ongoing culture wars raging in the United States. With the decision to overturn Roe v. Wade this past June, numerous Republican-led state legislatures are instituting severe anti-abortion laws, many of which do not make exceptions for rape or incest. And these laws don't align with popular opinion. In fact, polls show a much murkier picture of Americans' beliefs about abortion. In May, a Gallup poll found only 13% of people in the country believe abortion should be illegal in all circumstances. However, this does not mean the majority supports all abortions, no questions asked. This same Gallup poll reported that only about a third of Americans believe abortion should be legal under any circumstances. So, how do we deal with the diversity of opinions surrounding abortion in the United States? Is there a compromise that could satisfy the majority of Americans? Joining me now, we have Abby Wendell, a producer with NPR's Invisibilia podcast, and Carrie Seatstra, director of the Period Pills Project. Abby recently reported on what scientists are calling, quote, period pills in a story titled A Little Bit Pregnant. Abby and Carrie, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, thanks for having us.
It's so great to have you. And Abby, some say that there's no way to be a little bit pregnant. So what does it mean to be a little bit pregnant?
I know, right? It's like that joke, you know? But I talked with this woman, Allison Kaufman, and I'll just share her story because I think it like really illustrates the idea. She was, is that okay?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Because I think it is a really difficult idea to get your mind around. But Allison, this was a couple of years ago, she and her husband started trying to have a baby. And it took them a couple of months, but eventually she missed her period and she tested and it was positive. You know, and that day she was like, this is excellent. Like, I'm pregnant. I'm going to have a baby. And a couple of weeks later, she went for her first prenatal exam. And when the ultrasound technician started doing the exam, they couldn't find a heartbeat, right? Mm. There was no fetal cardiac activity. And Allison's doctor told her that what she was experiencing was something called a missed abortion, which is a type of miscarriage where essentially your body thinks that it's pregnant. And so it continues behaving as though it's pregnant, but it's not a viable pregnancy. And Allison, of course, was devastated. And a couple of weeks after that experience, she actually received a bill from her insurance company, which confused her because she had insurance coverage that was supposed to pay for all prenatal care. And she called up the insurance company to be like, you know, why are you not covering this exam? And the woman on the other end of the line said that, well, because you didn't have a positive first exam, we don't consider you pregnant. Like, that's not our definition of pregnancy. And so, it was like insult to injury. And it really threw Allison into this like tailspin about, you know, what is pregnancy? I was not pregnant. Like, who gets to decide that?
And in this story, I think, and I hope I'm not jumping ahead on you too much, but I think part of that story helps you set up this thought experiment that you ask listeners to participate in, centering around a pregnancy test as being kind of how we understand what determines whether or not we're pregnant. And I want to play a little clip from your story of researcher Suzanne Bell tinkering with this idea.
like Schrodinger's cat, and that philosophy of the cat in the box could be dead or alive at the same point, but until you open up the box and confirm, both realities could be true. In the same way, you know, you could be perhaps pregnant and not pregnant at the same time, but if you don't test, you don't know.
So, Abby, you know, how is it possible to claim that you're not pregnant simply because you haven't completed a pregnancy test?
Well, I think it raises, you know, the question of like how we define pregnancy. And I think the pregnancy test culturally in America right now, it's so ubiquitous, and there's kind of an entire like industry that exists around, you know, expecting to have a baby in 9 months that really breaks pregnancy down into this binary. You know, you pee on a plastic stick and it's a plus sign, it's a negative sign, which makes it seem like this binary. But when you talk to doctors, which I talked to quite a few for this story, they'll talk about the fact that even the medical definition of pregnancy, which is when a fertilized egg implants itself in the lining of the uterus, that's not something that happens in a binary way. That's not like a momentary thing where you're not pregnant and then suddenly you are. That takes days to happen. Mm. And pregnancy might be better thought of as like a process that can be quite precarious. You know, that it's never certain you're going to have a baby at the end of it until like you actually have a baby at the end of it. And I think it really gets at this idea that like the definition of pregnancy is in part cultural. You know, in America in the 1800s, we have had like different ideas about what the definition of pregnancy was. And it was when a woman felt quickening, when she felt a baby, you know, move or kick inside of her, because we didn't have a pregnancy test. We didn't have like an external diagnostic technology that allowed us to kind of detect a hormone in your urine. And so I think there, you know, the idea that like the definition of pregnancy is like a fixed certainty is not maybe the best way to think about it. And it's certainly not like the experience that a lot of people who have the capacity to, you know, be pregnant experience, including Allison.
And so continuing on this thread, why would someone consider opting out of a pregnancy test?
Because they don't want to be pregnant. and because they want to think about a missed period being a different kind of clinical condition. You know, their definition of pregnancy might not be rooted in having some HCG in their urine. You know, a lot of people that I talked with talked about how pregnancy isn't just a bodily reality. It's a state of mind. It's a desire to have a baby and be a parent. And so, you know, if you miss a period, and also, you know, it's important for us to remember that there's all sorts of reasons that people do miss periods aside from just being pregnant, right? Absolutely. There's medical conditions that people have. Irregular periods are very common. And so I think to kind of jump to the conclusion that a missed period is a pregnancy is maybe not the best way. It you know, it just doesn't take into consideration those other experiences that people have. But you know, when talking about period pills, it really is, it gets it fundamentally like, you know, how does that person want to define pregnancy in their own life?
Well, let's talk about period pills, what they are and how they work.
Sure.
Hi, Carrie.
Carrie, hi, Abby. Well, jump in there, Carrie.
Sure. Thanks for having me. So period pills are essentially the same pills that we use for very early medication abortion. So they are misoprostol either alone or with mifepristone, and they cause the uterus to contract and expel its contents. So they bring on bleeding whether or not someone is pregnant if their period is delayed. And I think one of the like real benefits around period pills, as Abby has mentioned, is that it can really embrace someone's lived experience, especially of ambiguity around the beginnings of a possible pregnancy. right? So we know that people can have a urine pregnancy test and it shows a raised level of HCG if it's positive. But we also know that doesn't necessarily mean that someone has an ongoing pregnancy, right? That could indicate they have a blighted ovum. It could indicate that they did have an embryo that was beginning to implant, right? That has already stopped developing and will be shed, you know, within a day to 3 days. And it could indicate that there's an embryo that's still developing that will stop at some point in the next 2 or 3 weeks, right? And of course, it can also indicate that you're at the beginning of what will become a viable pregnancy that would end in a live birth without intervention. So for a lot of folks who have a late period, there's what Suzanne Bell has termed productive ambiguity, right? This time period of not knowing. And so period pills give folks the option, which we have technologically. We've used these pills safely for over 30 years, both internationally and in the US, to take action during that ambiguous period, should they want to ensure that they are not pregnant, without ever needing to enter sort of Western late 20th century scientific conceptions of a pregnancy binary, which by the way, is complicated, right? There are a number of binaries around pregnancy. Quite religious people see the fertilization of an egg as the binary, right? As Abby mentioned, in sort of Western medicine, we've seen implantation as the binary, but it turns out that the more we know about very early embryonic development, implantation itself is this multi-staged process, right? And then, of course, for lay folks, it's often this positive pregnancy test. But, you know, I think as anybody who's gone through IVF can tell you, the women often have this experience of getting a positive pregnancy test, right? And then bleeding within 24 to 72 hours, right? Which in the IVF community, folks often refer to as a chemical pregnancy because it's so early, it hasn't been able to be confirmed by ultrasound. So while we often, again, think about this binary, it's much more complicated, both scientifically and in people's real lives at times, right? And we can think about using that productively if we want to.
Carrie, you are part of a national working group on period pills. Can you talk a little bit more about who's in the group and what exactly you're advocating for?
Sure, I'm happy to. So the National Working Group on Period Pills has 22 members at this point from 12 different advocacy and research organizations, all of which work in reproductive health and justice in some way. So the group is really dedicated to pursuing more research in the United States around period pills because we have great peer-reviewed research from other countries, but we know that often medical folks in the U.S. really prefer to have U.S.-based research as well. And then to pursue education and advocacy around period pills as an option for fertility control in the United States and to make period pills available. So I think one of the real successes that we've had at the Period Pills Project, which is one of the member groups in the working group, is that period pills are now available in 6 states and the District of Columbia via telehealth. And so they are, in fact, a real option in parts of the United States today.
That's so interesting. Abby, in your reporting, you use the phrase menstrual regulation. Can you describe what that is?
Yeah, I mean, menstrual regulation is like an ancient practice that has existed all over the world, where people have done things to restore their menstruation when it's late and they don't want to be pregnant. You know, in historically, people have used herbs, tinctures, teas. Like I mentioned, in the 1800s, there was something called female monthly pills that I think there were even kind of traveling salesmen who would go around to give to women. And it's basically just the idea of restoring your menstruation to a kind of normal cycle.
Which is something that I think a lot of women sometimes struggle with. If you're just joining us, I'm Bridget Bergen from the WNYC and Gothamist Newsroom, filling in for Brian today. We're speaking with NPR's Invisibilia producer, Abby Wendell, and Carrie Seatstra, director of the Period Pills Project. Listeners, we want to hear from you. Would you ever consider taking period pills, or is there an instance in your past where you wish period pills were an option? Maybe menstrual regulation is a practice in your culture and you have some knowledge you'd like to share about it. Doctors and abortion providers, would you feel comfortable with administering period pills and providing the option to opt out of a pregnancy test? Call in. We'd love to hear your answers and your questions for our guests at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692, or you can tweet at Brian Lehr. Though listeners might not be familiar with menstrual regulation, as you were saying, Abby has a history in this country. I want to play another clip from your piece of Michelle Drew, a midwife you spoke with. Her grandmother was also a midwife and used to treat, quote, missed periods before Roe v. Wade. Let's take a listen.
Someone would come in and it would be around, I'm late, you know, my courses are late, and her eliciting, well, when's the last time your courses came on? Was it last month? Was it the month before?
Conversations would go on like this, sometimes a physical exam, until Michelle's grandmother was satisfied she knew just how many courses were late. But at no point during any of this would anyone ever mention pregnancy.
Abby, you know, I think we may have some listeners who are now wondering, you know, is this just a question of semantics? You know, how is this different from abortion?
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of the response from my editor at first, to be honest. And also my current husband was, he's a biologist, and I think Carrie and Wendy both, you know, they encountered similar feedback from people in the abortion rights movement and journalists and doctors when they first started talking about this idea. But like, you know, the period pill working group has done, they did a survey back in 2015 where they asked people who were at clinics in two different states if they would be interested in, you know, instead of taking a period or instead of taking a pregnancy test when they went to the clinic, if they could just get pills in order to bring their period back without confirming formally whether or not they were pregnant. And 40% of all of those people said yes, they would love to have the pills instead of taking a pregnancy test. And 70% of people who definitely did not want to be pregnant were interested in having the pills. And so, you know, while I think like an outsider can look at it and raise the question of whether or not it's semantics, I think for a person who is in the position of needing healthcare, for them, like it's very easy for their mind to expand and for this to answer a need that they feel like they have.
It's so interesting. You've talked about how, you know, there are other parts of internationally where this is, you know, the use of these pills is relatively common. I'm wondering, are there countries that have, you know, abortion bans in place, but that allow for menstrual regulation?
Go ahead,
Carrie. No, go ahead.
Yeah, so there are two countries where menstrual regulation is legal today, one of which is Cuba, where abortion is also legal, but the other is Bangladesh. And in Bangladesh, abortion is illegal, but menstrual regulation is both available and publicly promoted as an important part of maternal health. And there are reasons that are culturally specific in Bangladesh around some conceptions within Islamic tradition around when ensoulment occurs that make menstrual regulation a particularly good fit in a more conservative sort of Islamic culture. But we also know that these sorts of threshold liminal practices are quite common culturally in a number of countries, including ones in South Asia and some in Southeast Asia, as well as Latin America and the Caribbean and South America. And that often culturally, at least, they're seen as maybe an easier first option than formally engaging in an abortion, right? Often we see people try to take action in all sorts of contexts when they think they may be pregnant and don't want to be, starting with something that feels great and potentially easier, like a tincture or tea or pills, and then moving to more intense interventions as needed if their period doesn't come down.
Could I add on to that? We
sure,
spoke
Jenna.
With an activist in Peru, where I believe abortion is illegal, she helped put people in touch with people who could get them medications, and people came to her both for abortion medication, but also for they weren't calling them period pills, but for ways to regulate their menstruation. And she said that it was really interesting because the people who came to her seeking menstrual regulation services were just like much more relaxed and much calmer. And that in Peru, at least, talking about menstrual regulation is like more open and more accepted than being able to talk about, you know, having an abortion.
Sure. Yeah. I want to go to one of our callers. Let's bring in one of our callers. Carmen in Brooklyn has a question. Carmen, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I actually told the screener that I felt compelled to call in because I had a medical abortion last week. And I'm someone that's always, you know, been very active in Planned Parenthood rights, equal access to women's health care. But I'm curious because this is actually the first time I've ever heard of the term like a period pill. I've heard of Plan B, obviously heard of the abortion pill. I'm just curious about like how this is different and how this can be properly communicated to people so that they better understand that the period pill is not in fact abortion or is not in fact a contraceptive.
Right. So that's a wonderful question, Carmen. And I also just want to affirm your bravery and openness in talking about your abortion last week. And I hope you were feeling well. So Plan B, right, which will prevent ovulation, is something that you can take before or during ovulation to try to prevent pregnancy. Period pills are the same pills we use for a medication abortion. So just like the pills you took last week for an abortion, this is either misoprostol alone or misoprostol with mifepristone taken before it to increase its speed and efficacy. And to be really clear, period pills will cause an abortion if someone is pregnant. Right. Some of the advantages, though, of period pills is that they can be taken even earlier than most providers will provide a medication abortion. So they can be taken when someone is just 3 or 4 or 5 days late with their menses, and that they will also bring down a period in most cases if someone is not pregnant. Right. And so for those who would prefer to stay within that range of ambiguity, they offer an earlier and different choice than medication abortion would, which people might want for lots of reasons. And to the question of educating folks, like this is a big piece of what we struggle with in the working group, right? That this is a complicated gray space in a very emotional context where folks have very strong opinions, where we know that there are folks who are opposed to abortion, who see even oral contraceptive pills as being abortifacients, right? And so trying to be very clear about what these pills are and how they work is, I think, one of the most important pieces of work we have, so that people can be clear when they choose to take them, what is happening in their bodies, and make sure that that is what they want to choose.
Carmen, thank you so much for calling, and please feel free to call us again. And Carrie, thank you so much for that explanation. I think that kind of gets at a question that I want to ask both you and Abby to weigh in on, which is, you know, this conversation is that much more, the tension around it is that much higher because of everything that has happened this summer. So I'm wondering, and let's start with you, Abby, how do period pills fit into the new reality of a post-Roe America where abortions are available in some states, but
not in others?
I mean, my impression, and Carrie, feel free to jump in too, is that we just kind of have to wait and see. You know, first, period pills have to catch on as an option that prescribers prescribe. And then, you know, we'll have to wait and see how it plays out in the courts. From the lawyers that we spoke with, you know, in places, you know, states where abortion is not an option anymore, probably period pills would also be struck down as something people could do. But we spoke with other lawyers who said that, you know, actually Carrie put it really well in the piece that, you know, putting pills into people's hands in progressive states is a great way to put pills in people's hands that can help increase access.
Sure. Go ahead, Carrie.
I think Abby's right on all of those points. And I would only add that there may be a longer term benefit culturally to embracing a more gray area at the beginning of possible pregnancy, right? That not only do period pills mean that folks in progressive states can get these pills, you know, as often as once a month, really, without a positive pregnancy test. And that's very empowering, puts lots of pills in people's hands. It may also mean that there is a little bit more psychological space for everyone to take a step back from such a black and white argument and to say, well, there's actually a very scientifically accurate way of looking at this that reflects many people's lived experiences that isn't black and white. And I think in such a polarized environment, the long-term benefits of being able to embrace some ambiguity and grayness may be really positive for folks in blue and red states.
And Carrie, just to build a little bit on that, you know, there are some folks who might hear this conversation who are pro-abortion and may feel like, you know, period pills feed into abortion stigmas. Anything you would want to say in response to that?
I think it is a valid concern. And what I generally say in response is that, you know, you can trust that the folks who are trying to make period pills more accessible are firmly within the reproductive justice community. And we will never set this option in opposition to abortion as if one is good and one is not. And I think it is safe to say that given that anti-choice folks often disapprove of Plan B, emergency contraception, IUDs, and even oral contraceptive pills, they are not going to hold up this option as the good moral option as opposed to abortion. So I think as long as we are very mindful that this is another piece of a spectrum of choices that fills in for many folks a time where currently we don't have options that empower us to make fertility decisions, right after our periods are late and we're worried we might be pregnant, that there are certainly ways that we can embrace both period pills and safe, legal, accessible abortion and hold them together and not pit them against each other. And that's certainly what we're trying to do.
And Carrie, just finally, you know, the kind of political question at the heart of this in some ways is, would the expanded education around period pills potentially be a way to appeal to more moderates? What do you think about that?
I think that there are folks on all parts of the political spectrum who might find this embrace of people's lived experience and productive ambiguity to be helpful, and that includes moderates. But I think there are so many different reasons why people might find this option to be attractive that it could apply to people on all parts of the political spectrum. And I've probably had over 200 conversations with women and non-binary folks who can get pregnant about this as an option. And I have yet to encounter a person who doesn't say something to the extent of, wait, we could do this? We could take pills when we're late and it's safe and they know this? Like, why can't we do that? Right. Mm-hmm. And so while I think it may appeal to moderates, I don't think that it is limited to moderates or that that is the primary reason to try to make this really quite empowering option available to everyone who's at risk of becoming pregnant so that they can make earlier decisions in a demedicalized context that meet their needs.
It's a really fascinating story. We're going to have to leave it there. Our guests have been Abby Wendel, producer of NPR's Invisibilia podcast, and Carrie Seatstra, director of the Period Pills Project. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thanks.
Thank you for having me.